Interesting, Mira murmured. He wanted to look professional. Spruced himself up for this kill, Eve added. Slicked up for the ex. Look at me, bitch. I'm high-end now. Salons, she told Peabody. Anywhere he can get a hair job, a treatment, new eye color. He changes his method. Knife to bat to strangulation. Experimenting? She asked Mira. It could be, yes. Or tailoring. Method to fit the kill and the sin against him. Yeah. More that, I'll bet. That would make him feel skilled and smart. He has to stay somewhere, sleep somewhere, live somewhere. He won't settle for a flop.
That would be beneath him, Mira concurred.
Maybe in the very short term if he was on the run, but I don't see it. Not now that he's tasted the big time.
A lot of hotels in New York, Peabody commented.
We cover them. He'll spend a lot of time watching and reading the reports on him, Mira added.
It's another validation. People know his name now, respect and fear him now. They know he's a man, a dangerous one.
The way he's spending the money he has, he'll need more soon. He'd figured out how to get it, and more. He'd forgotten to get bald Lori. He'd always think of her that way now, to transfer her savings to an account for him. He got caught up, Reinhold thought. She had a few thousand tucked away, he knew, and she'd distracted him with all that crying and shaking, so he'd killed her stupid ass before he'd taken the money. Stupid, selfish bitch. Didn't matter. What did he care? He didn't need her pathetic waitress money. He thought he'd be tired by now, but found instead he was revving, like he'd scored really good drugs, which, he thought, might go on his shopping list. But for now, he needed a nice place to stay, another infusion of money into his fuck you fund, and a stellar fake ID to go with the new look he had planned. All of those, and again more, should be available in the tidy brownstone in Tribeca. No, he didn't need bald Lori's pitiful savings. He'd do a lot better than that. He just had to wait for the bitch Ms. Farnsworth to take her dog, the little shit pile Snuffy, out for his last walk of the night. Or should we say, his last walk ever? God, this was fun. He couldn't keep the place in view from a cafe the way he had for Bald Lori, so he had to stay out of sight, in shadows, or pretend to talk on his link. Just after 11, he saw the door open, and fat-ass Ms. Farnsworth came waddling out with the ugly little mutt on a leash. She talked to the dog in that high, annoying voice of hers, the same voice she'd ragged on him with when she'd screwed him over in computer science in high school. They'd made a big deal of her when she'd retired. He'd even gotten a damn Evite to her retirement party. Hell of a nerve, after she'd flunked him out of spite. When she'd made it half a block away, stopped for the dog to take a shit on the square of ground around some tree, he slipped through the gate of her narrow front yard and back into the shadows near her front door. Nice house, he thought. He'd be happy here for a couple days. Bitch inherited the place when her real estate daddy died. Lived alone since her stupid husband croaked. No wonder she lived alone, considering she was fat, ugly, and mean as an alley rat. He slipped the baseball bat out of his bag. Enjoyed the feel of it in his hands, knowing what he'd do with it. He thought how he could have been an assassin, one of those special operatives, licensed to kill, the government ran. Maybe he still could, after he'd finished what he needed to do. It might be fun to kill people he didn't even know. But he knew so many who really needed to die. He was going to be really busy for a while. A career opportunity would just have to wait. He watched her come back, ugly dog prancing. When they clanked through the gate, his heart picked up its beat in anticipation. The dog stopped, quivered, barked. Shit, he hadn't thought of that.
Oh, now, Snuffy. Isn't that bad cat again, that nasty bad old cat?
Yeah, Jerry thought, grinning. I'm a bad cat.
Come on now, don't be such a baby.
She scooped up the barking dog, cradling him, hushing him, and walked to the door. Turned the key. Opening the door. He was on her like a leech. One swing to send her pitching forward, slamming the door behind him, breathing fast, fast as he fought the urge to just wail away. Instead, he gave the barking, quivering dog one hard kick that sent Snuffy smashing against the wall, then dropping just like its mistress. He had to slow his breath, force himself to slow it down, slow everything down until the tornado roar of blood storming in his head died so he could just think again. Then, with a self-satisfied nod, he propped his trusty bat against the wall and rubbed his hands together in anticipation of all to come. In Chelsea, Eve spoke briefly to the waiter who had served Reinhold. He came in about 4:15 maybe, ordered a Maxima latte, double shot caramel, and a grand chunky chunk cookie. He worked his link in PPC, but lots of people do. Did you hear him talking to anyone? The waiter scratched his ear as if it would help him think.
Now that you mention it, I guess not. He was just sitting there, watching out the window, and he'd try his link off and on, poke around on his handheld. I figured he was maybe waiting for someone, and they were late, but I asked him if he was, like, expecting someone, and he said no, he was just killing time before an appointment. He paid cash. I mean, after all that hang time, he got up all of a sudden and fast, left cash on the table, grabbed his bag and bugged out, kind of trotting. I went to make sure he covered the tab. He did. Not much tip, but covered. And I spotted him cutting across the street, zipping around cars stopped for the light. That's about it.
What kind of bag?
What kind of what?
Bag, Eve repeated. You said he grabbed his bag before he left.
Oh, yeah, right. Pretty nice bag. Looked new, I guess. Black, big. I guess it was like a duffel, but classier. I didn't pay much attention.
Good enough. If you think of anything else or see him again, get in touch.
No sweat on it.
She went outside where McNabb and Rourke stood on the sidewalk in geek conversation. She held up a hand to cut that off.
Security visuals? We were just talking about that.
Not in English. McNabb just grinned at her.
We've got him off a few street cams, and we can put that together. What we were figuring is how we backtrack, see if we can catch him farther back to where he came from.
Why didn't you just say so?
We did, or were, Rourke corrected. Since the privacy laws put paid to use of satellite observation, we're dependent primarily on building cams where they exist. We were working out the best probabilities on tailing him back to his source or mode of transportation.
Okay. Keep doing that. Let me know when you've got anything we can use.
A minute? She said to Rourke, and moved a few paces away.
You're not going home, are you?
I want to play with my friends a while. I may miss curfew.
She glanced back at McNabb, currently talking to Peabody and doing what she thought of as the EDD shuffle. His colorfully clad body just couldn't stand still while he was in E-mode. And here was Rourke, cat quiet in his perfect black trousers and leather jacket. Yet they were friends, she thought, with all that entailed. Suit yourself. My preferred method. So, he grabbed her, kissed her hard before she could evade. On duty and in public. But you did say suit myself, Lieutenant. She punched him lightly in the stomach. Me too. Peabody, with me. She walked across the street to where her car, as promised, waited. While Eve worked, so did the man she hunted. Here he could take his time and enjoy the excitement of wandering through a house without permission. He could do whatever he liked, have whatever appealed to him. Plenty of electronics here to sell or trade and add to his fuck you fund. An obvious e-geek at heart, Ms. Farnsworth liked her gadgets, including a house droid duded up in a black suit and luckily in sleep mode. He knew enough about programming from the courses he'd taken that his dead, tightwad parents had whined about paying for to wipe the droid's memory chips. Reprogramming was more of a head-scratcher, but he could handle the basics. And he'd get fat fuck Farnsworth to walk him through the fancy stuff later if he needed it. He helped himself to a snack after he'd tied and gagged the old bitch to a chair in her home office. They'd work there, so he'd ordered the rebooted droid to haul her fat ass up the stairs, then shut down again. Then Reinhold took his tour. The place smelled like old lady, and of the dog currently quivering and glassy-eyed in the corner. Probably broke something inside the little turd head with the kick, he decided, and stuffed more salt and vinegar chips into his mouth. A treat he washed down with Coke. Now and again, he wiped his salty hands on some of her fussy curtains or the back of a chair. He poked through her bedroom. Big-ass screen there. The old bitch was loaded. Not the sort of thing he could get down and out by himself. Maybe use the droid for that, he considered. And he could send the droid out to hawk some of the e-stuff. Not too close to the house, though. Not where the old bitch shopped. He'd have to think about that one. But for the meantime, he'd enjoyed the big screen while he was in residence. He cackled over his good luck when he discovered she not only had a jet tub, but a big fancy shower, multi-jets. Now this was living. He didn't know dick about art or give a shit, but he thought maybe he could take a couple of the paintings to a gallery, spin a tale about his dead aunt Martha, and see if he could get some cash. But his biggest discovery and thrill was the safe. A good-sized one, built into the wall behind a painting of a dumbass farmhouse and a field of some farming shit. An old safe, at least it looked old, with its classic combo lock. Probably been in the house for decades, maybe more. And whatever was inside now belonged to him. Back in her bedroom, he dumped all her fat old lady clothes out of the closet and into bags. Maybe he could get something for them, but mostly he wanted them out. He dragged them, the stupid dog bed, the smelly basket of dog toys into another bedroom. Guest bedroom, he imagined, with its fussy, lacy things and pictures of flowers. She had an unexpected guest now. He went back, changed out of his suit into new jeans, a designer t-shirt, and new skids. Work clothes, he thought, checking himself out in the mirror. He set out his things in the bathroom for later. The hair color, the trimmer, the face and body bronzer. He'd wanted to go to a fancy salon, but he wasn't an idiot. Anyway, he'd read instructions on the net on how to do this makeover deal. He could pull it off, and later he'd try that fancy salon to polish it all up. He just needed to look different
and to have that look for the new ID the old bat would help him create. He knew just how to convince her. He took out the pair of metal cutters, the meat cleaver he'd found in her kitchen, handy and full of potential, and a little battery-operated hand drill. That should do it for now, he thought, and strolled back into the office. He smiled brilliantly when he saw her eyes open, terrified, confused. Bumped up the smile when those eyes landed on him, when he watched recognition and then horror bloom in them. "Hi, Ms. Farnsworth. Remember me? You flunked me out of comp science, screwed up my life. We're going to have ourselves a teacher-student conference." For effect, he thwacked the meat cleaver into the desk. "Starting now." Chapter 9. He pulled a chair over so they faced each other, braced an ankle on his knee. "I had to take your stinking class over because you had it in for me. I got in-home detention for a month, stuck in there with my bitching, carping parents. You fed them lies when they came in for your student crisis meeting. You told them I was lazy and careless, how all I wanted to do was play comp games instead of learning the lame, stupid, worthless science. You cost me my fucking summer. All those weeks taking that class over when my friends were hanging. I couldn't go to the shore." He lifted the nippers, studied them, smelled her fear sweat. "It was the worst summer of my life. My friends ragged on me every damn day, and I was stuck in class with losers just because you wanted to screw with me." He leaned forward, and though she tried to curl her fingers, keep them balled in a fist, he pried one out, fit the nippers over it, smiled at her. "I'm going to take the tape off so you can explain all this to me. Give me your side of it. If you scream, I'm going to snip this finger off at the knuckle. You got that?" She nodded, her eyes glued to his as he pulled at one corner of the tape. "One scream, one finger," he warned, and yanked the tape free. She hissed in a breath at the rip on her skin, let it out in a tremble. "I won't scream, Jerry. Nobody's going to hear you anyway, the way you've got this place closed up, but I don't want to hear it." He really wanted to tighten his hold on those nippers, feel the snip, watch her face when he did. But it occurred to him she might need her fingers to make the ID he wanted. Still, she wouldn't need her toes if it came to that. Slowly, he drew the nippers away, set them down. "So what's your side of it, Ms. Farnsworth?" He put on an attentive face and still couldn't conceal the ugly glee in his eyes. "I'm really interested." "I wanted to help you. I did," she insisted when he picked up the nippers again. "I went about it the wrong way. I made a mistake." She had to fight back tears of relief when he took his hand off the nippers, gave herself a moment, just a moment to gather herself. "I shouldn't have been so hard on you. You were on my case from day one. You had such potential." She wasn't entirely sure that was a lie. She had seen potential and utter laziness. But she'd tried so hard with him, had given him so many chances. For God's sake, she'd worked with him one-on-one, assigned one of her best students as his lab partner. "I couldn't figure out how to mine that potential, how to reach you." That was a lie, she thought. She'd been a good teacher, and she'd tried everything in her arsenal with Gerald Reinhold. He'd been one of her few failures because he hadn't cared. He'd been consistently lazy, obviously ungrateful. "That was my failure, my fault. You marked down my work." Part of her wanted to rise up,
to take him down to size with her outraged teacher's voice because she'd done no such thing. If anything, she'd given him slightly higher marks initially in hopes to build his confidence, inspire him to try harder. So she used that. I sensed great things in you, Jerry, so I pushed you hard. Too hard. I didn't see that until it was too late. I regret that. I'm sorry for that. I wish I could go back and do it all over. Do over! He snorted the term, but she'd confused him. He'd never expected her to admit all of it. Never expected her to see she'd been the one at fault. Didn't matter, he thought. The plan was the plan. Give me the combination to your safe. He snapped it out so fast, she jolted, and though her stomach clenched, she told him, slowly and clearly. If that's not it, you lose a finger. He slapped the tape back in place, walked out. Alone, she tried to shift, to turn and twist. She couldn't see the cords around her wrists, her ankles, but she could feel them cutting into her. He'd taped over the cords, taped around and around her and the chair so she was all but glued in it. But maybe with repetitive motion she could loosen it all, just enough. Or maybe she could find a way to coax him into freeing her hands. Where was Snuffy? What had he done to the poor little thing? Harmless as a lamb, she thought, and fought tears again. He'd killed his parents. She'd heard all about it on the media reports. Killed them and stolen their money. He'd kill her, too, unless she found a way to talk him out of it. Or get away. When she heard him coming back, she went very still. Cooperate, she ordered herself. Agree with him. Be contrite. She'd spent more than half her life teaching, and primarily teens, which could often be a frustrating, thankless job, until they bloomed a bit, turned the corner off that avenue of self-involvement. Watching them bloom had been one of her greatest joys. With Jerry Reinhold, she'd never seen the first tiny bud. You got a hoard in there, don't you, Ms. Farnsworth? Cash, jewelry, heirloom shit, right? That's worth a lot. Bunch of discs. You're gonna explain the ones to me marked insurance. I bet some of the shit you've got sitting around here is worth plenty. You owe me plenty, so we'll get started on that. We may just have to pull an all-nighter. He shoved her chair to the side a bit, brought himself up to the computer. First thing, I'm gonna need your passcodes. Let's start with your bank accounts. Because he wanted to, he gave her a hard, careless backhand. I said, I need your passcodes. Oh, sorry, he laughed. I guess you can't talk with your mouth taped up. He yanked the tape free, watched tears form in the corners of her eyes. It's payback time, Ms. Farnsworth. At her desk, Eve expanded her notes into a detailed report. She focused on it, setting aside the dregs of the emotional upheaval she'd caused, witnessed when she'd knocked on the door of Lori Nuccio's parents to tell them their daughter was dead. She couldn't stop their grief, and knew she couldn't take it on. What she could do, would do, was pursue and catch the man who'd taken their daughter and forever changed their lives. Lori's face had its spot on her board now, as she'd been, and as Reinhold had left her. The media would have that face by morning, the before, and would run it over and over. But she'd make damn sure they never got their hands on how Lori had looked when she died. Who else was on his list? Who would he target next? She got up for more coffee. Drank it standing at her window, looking out at New York. All those lights, Windows, sidewalks, the beams from traffic cutting through the dark. All those people going, coming, settling down, partying, having sex, looking for action, looking for quiet. How many of them had somehow offended or pissed off Reinhold in his 26 years? And how many might he get to in his payback spree before she stopped him? She turned to her board. Mother, father, ex-lover. Personal. Intimate. Would he stick with that? Grandparents? Did they make the grade? Cousins? Would it be family first? Payback for childhood slights, for lack of support, for criticisms? Friends would come next, wouldn't they, if he followed that sort of pattern? Would it be the one who won big in Vegas while he lost? The one who kicked him out for not paying the rent? He'd need opportunity, a way to get to them. She sat again, ran probabilities, then sat back, frowning, drumming her fingers over the results. The computer liked the Brooklyn grandparents, highest probability. Out of town set, very low. Friends got an even split. She wouldn't chance it. She'd have the grandparents under protection. But it didn't fit well in her gut, not yet. Weren't grandparents typically or generally more indulgent than parents, and wouldn't Reinhold see the pattern too? Then again, the Brooklyn set had some money from what she dug up. Not roll in it and sing happy songs money, but a solid foundation. He'd need and want more money. Offsetting it? Traveling to Brooklyn. Getting out of Manhattan, taking that time, making those plans. Not your next stop. I just don't feel it. The friends didn't have real money. But asshole Joe, as Peabody dubbed him, had hit it in Vegas. He could get two birds with one stone, couldn't he? Payback and the money he'd lost and his friend won. Maybe three birds, she considered, as he'd be happy to brag to asshole Joe about killing Lori. Someone who'd known her, a friend who'd probably agreed after the breakup that she'd been a bitch. Of friends and family, though she needed to dig deeper into the cousins, asshole Joe topped her list for targets. But even he didn't sit quite perfectly. Dallas, Peabody began as she started into the office. McNabb, isn't he going to want to circle back to his friends at some point? What? Reinhold. He's not a loner. Everything we've got on him indicates he likes to hang with his friends, go to bars, clubs. He wants somebody, and somebody familiar, to drink with, to bitch to. He's pumped right now. Adrenaline's flowing. Everything's gone his way. He's having his personal little celebration, but eventually, he's going to need to bump fists with his buds, right? I don't know. He's killed three people. His friends probably aren't going to want to bump fists. You're not thinking like him. He's rich on his scale. He's famous. He's got power and glory. If you can't rub that in the faces of your friends, then who? Right now, it's fancy hotels and food, new clothes. But he's got to see already that takes more money than he's got to maintain for long. Maybe, but we're about the same age. If, say, I had 175-odd grand fall into my lap, my initial reaction would be, holy shit, I'm rich, and I'd celebrate too. I'd buy new stuff, toss some of it around. I couldn't help it. But then you'd stop because you're not an asshole. Yeah, but he is. Considering, Peabody stepped closer to the board. He's not going to be thinking of investing for the future or paying his bills off or whatever things mature people do with windfalls. I get that. I get it. Eve pointed at Peabody, then because she saw her partner's gaze shift to the auto chef, pointed at it. But he's found an ambition, she continued, while Peabody scurried over to program coffee. He's never had one before. That's something I got from Mira. Something broke free inside him and released this killer from the lazy asshole. Now he's got ambition, and I think on some level he is thinking about the future.
Like an investment fund?
No, like how he's going to keep doing what he's discovered he really likes doing, and how to make enough money at it to keep up a high lifestyle. Fucker probably sees himself becoming some sort of big-ticket paid assassin, a hitman. But before that, he has to even the scales. Pay back everyone who crossed him, one way or the other. He can't keep moving from hotel to hotel. He needs a base, a hive, an HQ. Though she knew its miseries, Peabody sat in the visitor's chair with her coffee.
Okay, I see where you're going. He needs to score while he evens the score so he can get a place of his own, an iced place. He'd have to score mega to buy one, but not as mega to rent.
But to rent, he'll need more cash. Or better, a safe account because cash throws up flags. He'll need that ID and enough change in his looks so he can move around the city.
The grandparents in Brooklyn are pretty well set.
Yeah, the comp likes them for it. Did your grandparents ever piss you off?
Not really.
As she thought of it, of them, an easy smile bloomed on Peabody's face.
I guess they've kind of spoiled me. Well, all of us.
That's how it goes, right? Still, considering his meter for offenses and the fact he's been a major screw-up all or most of his life, there's probably enough there. I'm having them covered. It seems he's at least smart enough to figure we would.
Asshole Joe hit big in Vegas.
Eve nodded, rubbing at the tension in the back of her neck. Could go for him, especially since that's pretty fresh. But odds are Joe's already burned through a chunk of the big. He needs more than that. Another major infusion. In his place, I'd start on former employers. Even if they're not well set, wouldn't he see them that way? They own or run a business. They had authority over him, like his parents.
It's a good angle.
I think we push that one. And we start taking a look at high-end apartments, condos, townhomes currently for rent.
Hell of a lot of those, Dallas.
He only needs one, and so do we. Hoping to jog her brain, she angled toward the board, propped her boots on the desk in think mode. He can't stay deep in his old neighborhood, not if he's got half a brain cell working. Too big a chance, even if he alters his looks, somebody will make him. Not the ex's neighborhood either, she decided. But somewhere close. He'd want the familiar, the comfort of it, at least while he's still developing. And it's more satisfying to lord it over everyone, to have a fancy, expensive place close to where his friends have their cheap ones. Run some probabilities on that.
Okay. Meanwhile, McNabb let me know they've just about got the street cam angle worked out. They're up in the EDD lab.
I'll head up. Run the probabilities, send them to me. Then go home and get some sleep or catch some in the crib. We'll start back on this in the morning.
What are you gonna do?
Eve dropped her foot to the floor. That depends on what McNabb and Rourke have.
I'll stick here in case you get something hot. I've got a change of clothes in my locker. Maybe just tell McNabb I'll be in the crib.
Satisfied, Eve headed out and up. She avoided the EDD bullpen. Even in the middle of the night, it jumped and hopped and jiggled with wild colors and constant movement. She steered away, but made a mental note to carve out some one-on-one time with Feeney, her former trainer, partner, and captain of the Geek Squad. She spotted Rourke and McNabb through the glass walls of the lab and stepping in, almost staggered from the punch of clashing, crashing music. She recognized Mavis on the vocals, and however much she loved her friend, there were limits.
"How can you think with all that noise?" she demanded.
"Keeps the juices rolling,"
McNabb claimed, but bowed to Rank.
"Music end,"
he ordered, and cut Mavis off mid-wail. The room descended into blessed quiet.
"What have you got?"
Eve asked, as she stepped toward a screen where images flew by in a blur.
"A puzzle," Rourke told her, "with the last pieces just in place."
He swiveled on his stool to face her.
"In plain English?"
"Yeah, let's go with that."
"Starting at the victim's building, we were able to correlate from various security cam footage Reinhold's route to, and to a lesser extent from. It took some time in doing, as he made a few detours, and far from all buildings in that sector have cams, or working ones in any case."
"We nailed arrival, Dallas."
McNabb sucked from a giant go-cup.
"But he hit a residential pocket on departure, out of any cam range, and we haven't been able to pick him up. He could have grabbed a cab or a bus or kept walking. We'd have him if he headed into a subway. We've run all the stations in that sector. But he could have gone down somewhere else. We can keep looking."
"Show me what you have."
"We just put it together."
McNabb ordered the results on screen.
"We'll run it forward so you can see him arrive, then move into position."
She watched the rapid cab swing out of the tangled traffic, brake at the curb. Reinhold, in his new suit and dark sunshades, hopped out, hefted a long duffel.
"Zoom in there. Get me the cab number."
McNabb paused the run, sticking Reinhold as he'd secured the strap of the duffel on his shoulder.
"He's happy," Eve stated. "Excited. You can see it on his face. He's thinking about what he's going to do to her. How he'll do it."
"We got the number," McNabb told her,
but ordered the zoom so she could see it herself.
"We wanted you to see it before we called it in."
She pulled out her link. "Keep it going," she ordered, as she contacted the cab company's central dispatch.
"This is Lieutenant Eve Dallas, NYPSD, homicide. Badge number 43578Q. I need the pickup location of a passenger."
She relayed the information as she watched Reinhold walk, his movements smoothed out by geek skill as the cams caught him. She saw his head turn, imagined his gaze shifting over, up with the movement, looking at Lori's building, her apartment windows, Eve thought. Taking out his link, trying to contact her, see if she's up there. Her day off, he'd know that.
"Outside the Grand Line Hotel on 5th. Got it, thanks. Keep it going," she said to McNabb.
She wanted to watch him. She studied his face when she could see it, his body language as she contacted the hotel.
"Show me what you have on departure," she told McNabb once Reinhold walked into the cafe.
She repeated her name and identification data to the hotel clerk.
"Do you have a Reinhold Gerald registered?"
"One moment, Lieutenant."
"We have no one by that name."
"A checkout today."
"There's nothing in our records."
"What time did you come on shift?"
9 p.m.
Too late, Eve thought. But there would be security cams.
"I'm coming in. I'll need to see your security disks for today, starting at 7:30. All of them, all day."
She didn't wait for an agreement, just clicked off.
"You've got him walking south."
"Yeah. Then we get to this sector here. We catch him for a nano crossing over west, and that's when we lose him."
McNabb took another deep suck of whatever overly sweet drink he'd chosen.
"Most building cams here have a shorter range. If he'd gone into any of the buildings, the search would have nabbed him."
Opposite direction from the hotel where he got the cab,
she considered. Unlikely he was going back there. She paced for a moment. He knows we're looking for him. Knows we'll find Nuccio's body and fairly quickly. Maybe he thinks it'll be tomorrow, but still quick enough. He's not going to grab a cab near her place, so he needs to stay on foot long enough to put some distance between any pickup and the crime scene. Smug smile on his face, just strolling along. World's his clam.
Oyster, Rourke corrected, when McNabb's brows drew together in puzzlement.
He's too cocky-looking not to have another hole ready to crawl into. The village, maybe. Or Soho, Tribeca. Or maybe he walked south and then caught an uptown bus. Tucked in by now, wherever the hell he is. I'm gonna check out the hotel.
I'm with you, Rourke said, and pushed to his feet.
Do you want me to keep running the search, Lieutenant?
She considered it, shook her head. We've got what we're gonna get, and it'll have to be good enough. Peabody's using the crib. McNabb's face brightened.
Oh, yeah?
And don't even think about doing the deed in there. She strode out, knowing he'd probably do more than think about it. She decided to risk the elevator, breathed a little easier when she found it empty. What kind of a place is the Grand Line?
I thought you might ask.
Rourke tapped his PPC. Mid-sized business hotel. 24-hour services to accommodate the business traveler. A step down from the manor.
Well, most are.
She scowled when the doors opened and a pair of uniforms dragged in a pair of bloody, battered, still-spitting street LCs.
It's my corner, you thieving whore bitch! You don't own the sidewalk, cuntzilla! You tried to steal my John right in my fucking face! I can't help, I was walking by and he went for me instead of your fat, dumpy ass.
Noting the fire in fat, dumpy ass's eye, Eve instinctively nudged Rourke back an instant before FDA kicked out with a foot squeezed into a shoe with a toe as sharp and pointed as a stiletto. It connected with bare shin. Thieving whore bitch let out an ear-splitting yowl, swiped out with inch-long nails as pointed as the shoes. This time, blood flew, and pandemonium reigned as the uniforms fought to drag the women apart. TWB tore FDA's sparkly pink shirt, exposing one impressive man-made breast.
And you ask why men enjoy watching women fight, Rourke commented.
Oh, for the sake of silicone Jesus!
Eve grabbed one of them by the hair. She didn't know or care which one. Yanked, dragged, and managed to plant a boot on the other one's neck.
Knock it off!
Her voice echoed in the confines of the elevator.
Or I'll stun the pair of you. And shut the fuck up, she added, when the pair of them screamed out their curses and complaints. Secure these two, damn it! Come on, Dory, what the hell?
One of the uniforms crouched to slap restraints on one pair of wrists, while her partner did the other. The elevator doors opened.
Get them off! We're actually taking them down to now!
Yes, sir.
Hauling them up, the uniforms pulled the now weeping and wailing LCs off the car.
Well, now, that was entertaining.
Rourke took out a handkerchief, caught Eve's chin in his hand.
What?
Just a little back blow from the nail swipe. There, that's better.
God,
was all she said until they reached the garage level. You drive, she told him. I want to check on some things on the way. He got behind the wheel.
Such as?
I want to make sure Morris is on the third DB. I can put together how and when. I sure as hell know who and why. But it keeps it consistent. And I want to alert Harpo, hair and fiber queen at the lab. Mira thinks he took some of the Vic's hair. That's a personal trophy, if so. And I want to check on the probabilities I had Peabody run on his next victim. You believe there'll be a next? He's got one picked out. If we don't net him soon, we'll have another DB for Morris. She paused long enough to scrub her hands over her face. If he put half this time, effort, and thought into any one of the jobs he's blown through, he'd be at least middle management by now. This is more fun. You got that right. He's found himself. They have sites, right? Conduits, avenues, to hype yourself as a kill for hire, or to look for one? He sent her a sidelong glance. You'd know people who know people. Possibly. That was never my avenue, nor did I buy rounds at the pub for those who drove along it. But you know people. I do. It's just a side angle, but he likes this. And so far, it's working for him. He likes the high life and he likes killing. Right now, he's killing people he knows, has some grudge against, but most of them aren't going to keep him in the high life. Why not make your hobby your profession? He might think that. It's an interesting side angle. I'll ask around. He shouldn't have gotten this far. She let her head rest back. He hit it lucky with Nucho. She picks today to be out of reach. Get a new link and number. Without that, I connect with her, and I'd have asked about the locks. On top of it, he tried her old number. I know he did. We'd have had that, even on a clone. I'd have known he was trying to find her. Everything just played in his favor. Luck's a potent thing. Skills better. He pulled up in front of the Grand Line. The doorman hustled forward. Lieutenant Dallas, they're waiting for you inside. Mr. Wirtz at the desk. The place struck her as very clean and entirely too bright. Busy, even at this hour, the lobby throbbed with movement. Business people, she judged, coming in from late transpo, going out to same. Others sat slack-jawed with fatigue, mumbling into hand or earlinks. A striking man with a face too young for the silver mane of hair, and maybe that was the point, stepped around the long black counter at her approach. Lieutenant, Michael Wirtz, I'm the night manager. I have the security feed you requested. The clerk informed me you'd inquired about Gerald Reinhold. No one registered under that name. We have the alert in place. He got a cab out front at just before 1600 today. So I need to see that feed. I have it set up in my office, just this way. I admit to being unnerved when Risa told me. I followed the reports on this man all day. He opened a door behind the big counter into a small warren of rooms and cubes, then turned into an office. People often take advantage of the cab line here, he continued. In any case, security made copies of the times you requested. Take the lobby cams first, Eve told him. Wirtz used a remote, started the feed on his wall screen. Eve spotted Reinhold at 8:23. That's him. Ball cap, sunshades, the two suitcases. Oh dear. One moment. He turned to a comp, operated it manually and with a very swift touch. We checked in a guest named Malachi Gold at 8:28. He requested a day room. He showed ID, paid cash up front, as it says in these notes his credit card had been compromised at the transpo center. Oh dear, he repeated. What? I see here the ID card is invalid. It's over a year out of date. The clerk didn't check that or notice. What time did he check out? Officially, he hasn't, but we did a room check at 6 p.m., as he'd only paid for a day room. He wasn't in residence, nor were his things. Let me see the feed for 30 minutes before he caught the cab, Wirtz ordered the time to run. Speed it up. She watched, scanned. Stop it there. In the suit now. No suitcases, just the duffel. He'd been in and out at least once between check-in and this. I'll need a copy of the full day. Is the room he used occupied? No, we have it open. I want to see it. Right away. It's very disturbing. With nervous fingers, Wirtz tugged at his tie. I wouldn't like our guests to be made aware he was on premises. I'm not going to make an announcement. Let's see the room. It's on 12. He showed them out, gestured toward the elevators. I'll take you in, then, unless you need me, I'll go arrange for the disc copies. That works. I'll also need a list of names. Who checked him in, if anyone helped him with his bags, the doorman who got him the cab, anyone else on staff who had direct contact with him. I'll see you have it. He let them into the room on 12, hurried away. Has to cover his ass, or other asses, as he wasn't on, Eve commented. The expired ID should have been questioned. And he doesn't look like Mal Gold. Same age, sure. Basically, the same height, maybe, but that's it. The clerk wasn't paying attention, so he got lucky again. He doesn't check out, so nobody pays attention. Just a day room for cash. His version of a flop. She glanced around the streamlined, efficient space. Lots of tile and shiny silver. High-energy colors. Its own business center and mini-kitchen. She'd have the sweepers go over it, but didn't expect much. Just a place to stay for a few hours while he ran errands, made plans, showered, changed into his new suit. We'll see him going out with the suitcases again. Who notices that in a hotel lobby? But he's worked out where he'll try to sell what he didn't liquidate on Sunday. Takes it out, or pieces of it. Does some selling, does some buying. The suit, maybe, more clothes, the duffel, the bat. Need the duffel for the bat. She wondered as she thought it through. In and out, using this as a temporary home base. Jewelry stores, second-hand stores, pawn shops, selling, trading, even the suitcases at one point, and probably at least some of his old clothes. Shedding it all now for profit. Then, all done, he just walks out of here, catches a cab, and goes down to kill Lori Nuccio. She paced circles in the top-flight business-style suite. Shopping bags. He's bound to have come back with shopping bags, so we'll see where he went at least. She rubbed fatigue from her eyes. Look, I'm going to go ahead and review the discs back at Central. Catch a couple hours in the crib. I have a better idea. I had them hold us a room at the manor. It's close enough. You can review the discs there, and we can both catch a couple of hours in a room that doesn't include Peabody, McNabb, and potentially other cops. It was the room without other cops that decided her. Sold. Chapter 10. The room at the manor soothed with warm, deep colors, soft fabrics, and thick, age-faded rugs over the gleam of hardwood. Over a small stone fireplace, a wide-framed mirror reflected the style and dignity of the parlor. And at the touch of a button inside a wall niche, the mirror wavered away into the dark surface of a screen. Well, that's pretty frosty, Eve decided. Manor guests prefer the look of old world with the convenience of the new. We've blended them wherever we can. She needed the screen to view the security discs, but there were other priorities. Does that include an auto chef with decent coffee? It does, but we've both caffeinated enough at this point. I'll make a deal. he said before she could argue. If you find something, you can move on tonight. I'll load us both up. It was probably fair. She didn't like it, but it was probably fair. While she sulked over that, he went through a doorway, came back a few moments later with two tall glasses of water with a slice of lemon in each. Really?
Yes.
He kissed her nose. Really? She was thirsty enough to settle for it, and tired enough to sit on the arm of the big plushy sofa while he set up the disc. He didn't want to settle for a business hotel, Eve calculated. Good enough while he ran around the city, but not where he wanted to bunk. And he was smart enough to use Gold's old ID. He'd need his own to cash the checks, but smart enough or nervous enough to use a ploy to register at the hotel. Maybe he'll try using it again for his bedtime place. Wiser to spend some of that running around the city time getting a new ID, a fake one. You need to know how. And yeah, he could have found out how. Run it, she told him. Rourke sat on the opposite arm of the sofa, watching with her. Less than 20 minutes after check-in, they spotted him again. Rourke slowed the feed. Same outfit as check-in, just the briefcase. Bank time. Get the cash before the bodies are discovered. He pulled that off, she muttered. She watched him come back through the lobby, a fat, smug smile on his face. Timestamp 9:38. He hit the luck again, she said. Just frigging breezed through the banking, and now the briefcase is full of money and cashier's checks. He all but strutted into the elevator and was back again, strolling out, one suitcase, 11 minutes later. Just one suitcase. Gotta get rid of everything he can. Maybe not the big tickets. He didn't have a suitcase when he went into Ursa's, but the smaller ones. Cash those checks before the bodies are discovered and his face and name hit the media. He's still ahead of the game by just enough. Speed it up again. He came back without the suitcase, but wearing a suit and carrying a garment bag. Mission accomplished. And a little shopping, too. Can you? I am, Rourke said, and anticipating her, zoomed and magnified. On the rack for men, she read on the side of the bag. Do you know it? No, but give us a moment and I will. He's moving fast, Eve noted, and look at his body language, his expression. He's digging on the suit, likes how he feels in it. They have a location a block from the hotel. Good location for the business crowd who needs a change quickly. Alterations done on site, and within the hour for an additional fee. They run from suits to casual wear, shoes, accessories, and so on. We'll pay them a visit. She watched, waited for the next appearance. There. Timing-wise, he must be heading out with the watches. Suit and briefcase, and Ursa looks and thinks a nice young man. Busy, busy. We'll check with the day man on the door. Probably got a cab. Why not? He's pretty damn flush. She got up to pace, eyes on the screen, as Rourke ran it forward. There again. Out nearly 3.5 hours this time. Lots to do. What are those bags? Village Paint and Hardware, In Style, Running Man, that's one of mine, specializes in athletic shoes, clothing, accessories for men again. The duffel might have come from there. It fits. He's a man now. He likes shopping in male-specific stores. Hardware. He could have bought the cord and tape there. We'll check it out. What's In Style? Trendy clothing and accessories. Okay. She sat again. He went out again with the second suitcase. On his return, 18 minutes later, He carried the duffel and wore the stylish new sunshades he had when exiting the cab near Nucho's. Got rid of the other suitcase. And I'm betting the bats in the new duffel. That and anything else he thought of on this trip. Productive day. And there, she said when Rourke paused a final time. Leaving with the duffel. Done with the place. Catch a cab out front and it's off to kill. She rose again and paced. He had an agenda in place. A schedule. A to-do list. Maybe he varied it some. Impulse buys. Or he might have had to try a couple places before selling off the goods. But he stuck close to it. He had all that time with his dead parents and when he stayed at the manor to work it out. Day hole, banks, cash checks, sell, shop, grab lunch somewhere maybe, sell, shop, pack up his new stuff. He stays with the suit for the kill. Wants her to see him all dutied up. The suit makes him feel important, successful, rich. All the things he didn't feel when she kicked him out. She pressed her fingers to her eyes again. Hung out, had some fancy coffee, saw his chance and took it. But where did he go after the kill? He had to have another hole dug. Did he buy hair and face crap to try to make himself look more like gold in the expired ID? Is he going to chance using that again? It would be foolish, Rourke speculated. He has enough money to make an ID, or for now to pay cash for lodging. Yeah. Use the gold idea at the second hotel because most likely he blew through the cash he dug up at his parents. But he's got plenty more now. Still, we'll add gold's name to the alert, and EDD will check out the unit in the hotel. See if he used it after Nuccio. You need equipment, specific material to make an ID, and some skill to wiggle fake data into the system so it passes. Unless he got it on that last trip and stuffed it in the duffel, there's no sign he has anything like that. He has a schedule, an agenda, Rourke repeated, and he had the time to plan it. Any plan should include the ID. He could obtain a reasonably good one with the money he has, but a good one would cut into that considerably. I'm with you. So we have to figure out where he'd go and how he'd get one. You won't be doing that tonight. You need sleep. He's tucked in somewhere. Undoubtedly. Rourke rose to eject the disc, and the screen rippled back to mirror glass. And so should we be. I can go straight to Central from here early. I've got a change in my locker. You have one here as well, he told her, as he steered her toward the bedroom. I had Somerset send down what we'd both need for the night and tomorrow. And you needn't look quite so appalled. Not only does it save time and trouble, but I told him specifically what to send, so he didn't actually select your wardrobe. I guess that's something. And the big bed, with its fluffy duvet and mound of pillows, looked a lot better than a cot in the crib at Central. By the time she crawled into it, she was ready to give it up for the night. Tomorrow? Well, tomorrow Reinhold was going to have her right on his ass. She curled in as Rourke's arm came around her and let it go. In dreams, she sat with Lori Nuccio on the padded crates in the tiny apartment. Lori's hair swept down to her shoulders, sleek, a glossy reddish-brown. Blue eyes reflected sadness out of her unmarred face. I didn't want to look like how he left me. Yeah, I get that. I thought he just needed motivation and, you know, inspiration. He was cute, and he could be funny. He wasn't stupid, and he wasn't mean. Not at first. He treated me okay, and I wanted to help him. I was the stupid one. I don't think so. You cared about him. You thought you could help him grow up some.
Yeah, I guess. I liked having a steady boyfriend. Having somebody. And he'd had some bad luck. He said he had. A lot of bad luck. People were jealous of him and screwing with him. But that's not really the way it was. He had such nice parents, and I thought he'd come around. She knuckled a tear away. But he just got worse instead of better. He wouldn't work, and he complained all the time, and he never helped clean up the apartment. Then he took the money, my money, and when I got mad, he hit me. I had to kick him out. It was what I had to do.
It was. You didn't do anything wrong.
But he killed me for it. And now I'll never get married or have kids or go shopping with my friends. And he hurt me really bad. He cut my hair off and it was so pretty. Now I look like this.
Her hair fell away, hank by hank. Her eyes swelled, blackened. Her lips split. I'm sorry for what he did to you. I should have stopped him.
I just wanted a fresh start, but he wouldn't let me. I don't want my parents to see me like this. Can you fix it? Can you fix me?
I'll do what I can. I'm gonna find him, Lori. I'm gonna make sure he